Good afternoon, everyone. Meeting of the House Ways and Means Committee will come to order. Clerk will note the roll. There is a quorum. Members, we have the minutes of the April 21st meeting before us. Representative Carlson moves approval of the minutes. Any corrections, additions, or changes to the minutes? Seeing none, all in favor of the April 21st minutes signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. The minutes are approved. Members, we have one item of business today. That is House File 844. Representative Loon. Chair Loon moves that House File 844 be referred to the General Register. And Chair Loon, I guess if you can give us a presentation on your bill. I don't know if you want to have staff walk through the spreadsheet first or have you go through the bill however you wish to do it.
Well, I guess whatever your preference is, Mr. Chair, if you want, I'll just kind of at a very high level go over some of the kind of the financial particulars of the bill and then maybe have nonpartisan walk through the spreadsheet and then be happy to answer any questions for members.
That sounds good. Please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. Well, as you all know, our target was just under $157 million over base for the Education Finance Committee, and most of that money we directed onto the formula, and so there's a 0.6% increase each year, so 1.2% increase in the formula, general education formula for the biennium. We also provided more funding for extended support, or what's known as formerly known as extended time revenue. So for those students who are struggling and need a little extra support, either after school or tutoring or summer programs, we put more money into that. We also allow charter schools to be able to have that aid for the first time. They have not previously been able to access that, and so we kind of phase that in for them at 25% of the statewide average on that program. We increase school readiness aid, and we do about a $10 million increase in school readiness. We provide some compensatory grant funding that has been done in the past for some selected school districts. Increased transportation aid for some rural districts, what's known as sparsity, for districts who have a lot of miles to cover and a lot of children to pick up on the school bus. And also some additional assistance for our Native American children through increased funding for Success for the Future. So overall, we devote about $45.2 million of in increased spending over the base for early learning and literacy programs, $30 million for early learning scholarships over base, as I mentioned, about $10 million in school readiness, about a $7 million increase in Reading Corps, which is a literacy program for preschool through third grade, which has a great track record of success, and a little extra money for parent-child home grants. This is a home visiting program, also a data-driven great track record. We repeal the statewide education property tax or student achievement levy, and that was basically we replaced that $18 million with state aid. We redirect about $22 million by reducing some of the mandated testing and put that into money on the formula for our students. And let's see, just trying to give you a high level. We put $3.5 million to make sure that the quality rating and improvement system, commonly known as Parent Aware, is funded moving into the next biennium. And then also, you know, just a lot of things to try to give our schools some flexibility on the money that they spend and making sure that they're able to devise their programs as they see that best suits their students' needs. I would say our overall priority with what we did with the target was to try to focus on closing the achievement gap. And for many children, that starts in early childhood, so we definitely had an emphasis there, but also on struggling students with the extended support revenue and some of our other initiatives. So with that, Mr. Chair, I would be happy to answer any questions once Ms. Johnson has run through the spreadsheet.
Ms. Johnson, why don't we have you go through the spreadsheet?
Mr. Chair and members, my name is Melissa Johnson. I'm the fiscal analyst for the Education Finance Committee. You should have before you two spreadsheets. In the education finance world, as you know, in education, we fund schools with a combination of state aid and local levy. And so to the extent that there's a revenue component that has an aid and levy component and any changes that we contemplate to that, we need to be able to track how that will impact the other. So I'm going to walk through first the legal size document. It's the appropriations tracking, and it's on legal size. And the general layout of the bill is that each the order of the bill is by article. So for example, Article 1 is the general education, Article 2 education excellence, and so on. So that kind of gives you an idea of how the flow of it is. And then from left to right is obviously the fiscal years. If you look at column A, that's the current biennium we are in for FY14-15. The next three columns are the forecast base. And in the education world, a very significant portion of funding, for at least on the aid side, is formula driven. So that to the extent that enrollment is increasing or their eligibility changes, more students eligible for special ed or other types of free and reduced lunch counts, other things that drive funding, that has an impact on the base. So the next three columns, E through G, are the tails, and we want to keep an eye on those as we're contemplating changes for the current biennium. But those are the forecast tails. And then the next set of columns, H through P, are the House recommendations. And I won't go through H right away because there's just a couple of instances where that is impacted, where we're talking about or contemplating some cancellations. And I'll talk about those when we get there. But columns I through L, in particular column L, compares the House recommendation that's in column K to the forecast base, which it is in column D. So as we walk through the spreadsheet, keep a very close eye on on column L, as this will show you where the contemplated dollar changes are. So as Chair Loon mentioned, a very significant portion of the House's target was placed in the general education formula. The proposal is a $33 increase in fiscal 16 and an additional $34 in fiscal 17. So if you look at line 10, you'll see that the formula increase is, for the biennium, $97.7 million. Now, one just quick note about that's a little different than normal procedure is that with the compensatory, there's a couple of linked programs within general education and compensatory, sparsity, and things like that. With compensatory in this proposal, it's the base funding for compensatory is we will remain the same. However, the new dollars that go to compensatory from this formula increase are distributed on a district-wide basis instead of a site-based basis. So that's just a different way of distributing those dollars. So that's included in that $97.7 million. As Chair Loon mentioned, the extended time for districts and charters is about $2.4 million combined. The equity revenue changes, this was I believe, Representative Baker bill, where it has both an aid and levy component, and currently the metro districts receive a 25% equity bump for being in the metro region. However, this bill would make that 25% bump eligible to all districts throughout the state, so all non-metro districts would also get that 25% bump. There's transportation sparsity increases for districts that have some transportation costs and are located in large geographic areas. As Ms. Chair Loon mentioned, the restoration of the student achievement levy is at $18.2 million for this biennium. The only other significant one in Article 1 is on line 35, the compensatory pilot grants that goes to a handful of districts. The primary beneficiary is the Anoka-Hennepin district to kind of look at different ways of distributing compensatory revenue. So moving on to Article 2 of Education Excellence, you'll see on line 51, the Achievement and Integration Levy change. This is actually a savings, and what the proposal is to have a $350 per pupil cap on Achievement and Integration revenue and allow the districts, the aid amount that would be above the $350 would be aid savings, and the districts that are impacted, there are two districts that would be impacted, they are eligible to make up for that aid loss by increasing their levy by the commensurate amounts, and that's $6.1 million for the biennium. The Indian Education, the Line 54 Success for the Future is $1.4 million. On the next page, on line 60, is the concurrent enrollment. The House is contemplating a $5 million per year increase for college courses that are offered in the in a high school setting, so that would be an increase there. The Reading Corps on line 64. And then there are a couple of places on line 69 and 71, and also on the next page, on line 134, where we are proposing there are funds within these appropriations for the current biennium that have not been spent, and in most cases they are almost completely unspent, and so the House is proposing to cancel the appropriations for FY15 and carry forward into FY16, and I'll show as we move to the bottom of the spreadsheet how that carries forward for FY16. And Principals Academy is a Representative Fenton bill that is a policy priority. The next section, Article 3, as Chair Lewin mentioned, has significant changes to both to the scope of testing and just kind of like a different philosophy about how that would work. But the first line on line 98 is the statewide testing base. And last biennium, there was a drafting error where we didn't scale back. The House and the Senate's intent was to scale back the appropriation for the assessment budget after the new suite of assessments were phased in and put it back at a more at a lower level for 16-17, but we left out the rider, and so it went in at the higher amount that was for FY15 at 21. So when we brought it back to where their legislative intent was, there was a savings of about $4.5 million for the biennium. On line 99 is the testing repeal. The House proposal is to scale back the requirement that all students take the ACT test, and so that would cancel the contract with ACT for that, and that would have a significant savings of about $7.6 million per year or $15.4 million for the biennium. Line 100, even though the ACT test is being universally is not going to be offered and paid for by the state, there is money to provide the test to students who are eligible for free or reduced lunch, and that has a cost of a $1.75 million per year, or $3.5 million for the biennium. Articles 4 and 5 don't have any substantive changes, so unless there's questions, we can move on to Article 6, and there's just one change in this section. That's on line 131. It's the alternative facilities aid. Currently, or actually this needs a little bit of history and context, their ALT facilities program is available to the 25 largest school districts in the state to be able to do health and safety and deferred maintenance projects without voter approval. And as long as they have it within their 10-year plan, they are able to levy for the cost of those improvements. But in the late 90s, when the tax committee was going about looking at compressing the commercial industrial tax rates, there were a couple districts that were really significantly impacted by that change, where it would have hurt the homeowners significantly more. And so the kind of compromise position was to provide state aid to those districts that were most significantly impacted by that. But the House position for this particular line is to scale back that $19 million appropriation proportionally to those districts that are impacted and count that as savings that is spent elsewhere within the House target. The next page, Articles 7 and 8, we don't have any changes in that article, so I'll go on to Article 9, which starts on line 170 to 179. And as Chair Loon mentioned, the other major priority was in the early education. And so there's the ECFB, that's linked to the formula, so that's not really anything substantive, about $500,000. The school readiness is $5 million per year. The early childhood scholarships is $10 million in fiscal 16 additional and $20 million in FY17, so that's scaled up over the 2 years of the biennium. And line 174 is the statewide early childhood rating system, sometimes referred to as parent aware rating. And this is a $3.5 million appropriation that will be a pass-through to the Department of Human Services. Article 10, which is community support services, no changes to that. On the next page, on line page 4, on line 195, you'll see adult basic education aid. There are two areas within school finance that have inflation built in, and that's one area is in special education and the other is in this adult basic education. And the House position is that currently it's at, the inflation is at 3% annually, and this would scale back that increase to 0.5%, and that would result in a $3.3 million savings for the biennium. The next section, Article 12, is the state agencies. In education world, there are three agencies under the jurisdiction of the Education Finance Committee, that's the Department of Education, the Minnesota State Academies, and Purpich Center for Arts Education. And we have some significant changes here that will impact, and the biggest piece being, or two pieces, the one piece being the base reduction for the Department of Education of about $3.6 million. And then the next set of rows 216 to 218, currently the fees for licensing, when teachers apply to become a teacher in Minnesota, their licensing fees are deposited into the general fund. And likewise, the appropriations for the Board of Teaching and the Board of Administrators who administer the licenses are appropriated out of the general fund. However, the House position is proposing to redirect both the licensing fees and the appropriations for those particular groups into the special revenue fund that is being established through our bill. And so the special revenue fund would then fund the operations of the Board of Teaching, the Licensing Division, and the Board of School Administrators. And so those are reductions on the appropriation side. On lines 220 and 221, those are the Regional Centers of Excellence and School Safety Center. These are two programs that the House position is to discontinue funding for these two particular programs. Line 245, the House, Senate, and Governor have funding for a technology initiative for the Minnesota State Academies, which is in Faribault, Minnesota. 250 is Purpich Center for the Arts, and there's no changes contemplated there. On line 271, you'll see that the change from base for the target at this point is $154.4 million, and that's $2.3 million below the target. However, we have to take into account the interactions of the special revenue fund changes and the cancellations and carry forward. So that's what the next section on line 276 through 290 is. So you can see on the revenue change for the general fund that the licensing fees are coming out of the general fund. So that's a loss of general fund revenue. And then for the on line 282, the FY15 cancellation carry forwards, that is because we're canceling and moving that revenue forward for FY16-17, that's a revenue gain. So the net effect of those revenue changes is a $2.3 million revenue loss to the general fund. So that needs to be incorporated or taken into account to address for the general fund impact. And that is seen on line 298. So the general fund impact, when we take account for the revenue changes, is 156.7, which is the House target. And then you can also see, going back up to 258 through 290, that the inflow of funds to the special revenue fund for the teacher licensing fees. And so you can see how that interacts. And then on the last page, it's just a kind of another way of showing the special revenue fund and how the appropriations will flow out of there for the Board of Teachers and Board of Administrators and the revenue funds going in and how that plays together. So that's appropriations. If there's any questions on that or if you want to wait till later. The other spreadsheet is the education finance levies, and that's on the regular size paper. And this the levies are set up on this spreadsheet based on the school district's funds. So the general fund is first, and there's the community service fund, debt service fund, etc. So that's how the columns are laid out. Each of the columns or each of the rows represents a levy category that districts may or may not be eligible to levy for based on if they have voter approval or not. But so that is how it's laid out. On the columns from left to right, column A is the current fiscal year which we are in. But for the purposes of budgeting for for this biennium, if you take a look at line B for pay 15, fiscal 16, these levies have already been certified, and so there won't be any changes that would be impacted by the any changes contemplated in the House proposal. Instead, on column C is actually the forecast base, and so we're comparing the proposed changes to that forecast base. And a lot of these are just kind of counterbalances to items that you saw on the previous spreadsheet. If you take a look under general education line, in the column you want to pay closest attention to is column E that shows us the House current law difference. And so line 5 is the student achievement levy repeal. That's a $20.2 million decrease or levy savings. The local optional levy, this was the Anzalk and Heintzman bill that provides additional equalization aid for districts that have a high incidence of commercial or seasonal recreational property. And so it doesn't provide new revenue, it just provides more aid and less levy. On line 9 is the equity provision, that 25% equity bump, and that's the levy portion of about $6 million. And then on line 21, as I referenced previously, the integration and revenue program, the 350 cap, this would allow districts to make up the difference of the lost aid. However, it doesn't take effect until pay 17, so it doesn't have an impact for the current biennium. Line 41 is the ALT facilities change, where we're scaling back the state aid for ALT facilities aid and allowing the districts to levy for that additional amount. There are no other change items within this spreadsheet. The last thing I would point you to is line 170 on page 3. Basically, it shows that usually the education levy target is a zero levy target, and this came in at about $5.6 million under the levy target. So, Mr. Chair and members, that's kind of a walkthrough.
All right, members, I know we have one amendment, and I know we have one person that asked to testify, but are there any questions to the presentation? Later on, we can get back into the discussion of the bill. Representative Carlson, do you have a question?
I was waiting until you take your amendment, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, Representative Liebling, questions on the presentation.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I thought I heard something from one of you about a home visiting program. Could you just direct me to where that was and maybe give me just a little bit about that?
Representative Loon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Liebling. Yes, she
three. Mr. Chair and Representative Liebling, it is on page 3, line 175.
Yeah, it's known as the Parent-Child Home Program, and this is a program. It's a national program in scope, but a local social service agency, Jewish Family and Children's Services, operates it in Minnesota. They operate it in the metro area as well, as they've now expanded into rural. They've been doing it for a number of years, and they've gotten some additional funding through our bill in the past probably in the past 4 years, I think it's been. And so a highly successful program. They go into the homes. Obviously, it's voluntary for parents, but it's low-income parents, and work with the parent and the child, usually starting at about age 2 or 2.5, and they visit twice a week and track how those children do, and the data on school readiness, success in school, as well as success of the parents in improving their own educational and economic opportunities is quite impressive. So we give a small bump in funding to that program.
Thank you.
Okay. Representative Carlson.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, being that you went to questions on the presentation, if you don't mind waiting in on the amendment, you have a
sure, go ahead.
Questions right now. Representative Loon, in the presentation, and I can't help but notice there's a lot of language in the bill, could you identify for us what language items may have a fiscal impact, my definition of a fiscal impact is, you are increasing or decreasing funding or even closing out a particular activity, that would be having a fiscal impact. So if you could identify those, I didn't recognize much in that regard as you went through the bill.
Thank you, Representative Carlson. Chair Loon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Carlson. Well, I'll try, I guess, I don't know with regards to your standard. I will say that, you know, this committee already heard, and we've heard on the House floor, House File 2, which had a fiscal note. I think when we were here, the fiscal note continued to be revised after we left the Ways and Means Committee, and the final came in at $380,000, and that funding is included in the bill. Other than that, I don't think we have fiscal notes on or nothing came back with a fiscal note to indicate a revenue impact on the policy changes in the bill.
Representative Carlson.
Well, Mr. Chairman, there may not be fiscal notes, but you mean that none of that language reflects any increase or decrease in cost? I'm looking here now. Regional Centers of Excellence cut state funding for the Regional Centers of Excellence amounting to a $2 million savings. I don't think that was mentioned, if I recall.
Representative Loon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, yes, we did take the state funding portion in the bill that we're proposing. Now, this the department funds these through federal and state funds, so they will still presumably receive the federal funding, and that is because they are directed to work with our focus or priority schools. Those are our sort of underperforming schools, if you will. It's my presumption the department will continue to do that. They just won't have the state money to augment those activities.
And Mr. Representative Carlson, I'm just trying to
sure go ahead
solicit out of the presentation issues in the bill that may have a fiscal impact one way or the other. And I just happened to look at the summary that our staff has here that when I asked you that question, I just happened to flip it open, and I just saw that. I'm not necessarily interested in debating that particular provision, but it's just as an example of a policy change or a language change that you save $2 million. And I'm just wondering if there are other language items that either have a cost increase or savings that will be shifting costs onto school districts or Department of Education. There's nothing other than the one fiscal note, and now the one that I identified. There's no other item in the bill that has a fiscal impact one way or another.
Representative Loon.
Mr. Chair and Representative Carlson, well, I mean, none that we're aware of, and obviously we requested, you know, we've incorporated the policy bill that Representative Erickson moved from the Innovation and Reform Policy Committee in large part into the finance bill, and a fiscal note was requested on that as well. So any fiscal note that we received on any policy changes in that, we made sure to account for funding for that in this bill.
So,
Representative Carlson.
Mr. Chairman, so there's no policy where the expectation is that either the department or the school district cover those costs, so to speak, out of their current resources or the future resources that were pretty limited in the bill. So that's it. I mean, this is the Ways and Means Committee, and the rules provide that we have to account for costs that are up or down, and I just want to make sure that we've heard the entire bill.
Chair Loon.
Mr. Chair, Representative Carlson, well, I can tell you every effort was made to obtain a fiscal note on everything in here, and every fiscal note that we received that indicated a cost, we made sure that we put that amount of funding in this proposal.
And Representative Carlson. Just one final question. You know, when we talk about a fiscal note, we can also request, I don't know if you requested any local impact notes.
Chair Loon?
No, Mr. Chair, we did not.
Okay. I did request one, and it came back. They really couldn't provide much information. That was on the teacher licensure layoff. And it was difficult for them to analyze what cost would be there. I think if you read the note that there would be potential costs, but they just we're not able to really identify with what those costs might be, but that is one that has, in addition to the fiscal note, potentially at least, depending on what's happening in a given school district, I guess, some potential local costs as well. But I'll stop there, Mr. Chairman. I saw a couple of other hands come up. I may have some general comments later.
Sure. Any other questions on the presentation? Otherwise, I'll go to the amendment. Oh, I'm sorry, Representative Wagenius.
If this is a time to just understand the math of the bill?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you. Mr. Chair, when you were talking about closing the achievement gap, I was trying to just do the numbers in my head, and so I think I've done them, but I just want to go back with you and see. So, and maybe you have this number in your head. Of the four-year-olds that will be eligible for school, or of the four-year-olds, how many of those four-year-olds are covered by your scholarship program?
Chair Loon.
A math on that?
Mr. Chair, Representative Wagenius, you know, we've started looking at that. I don't have precise figures for a couple of things. One, I mean, we are proposing, about a 50% increase in the scholarship funding from what we currently have. When the program was initiated 2 years ago, there was a cap of $5,000 per scholarship recipient or awardee placed, and then with the directive that Department of Human Services was supposed to be doing a survey, if you will, to determine market rates, and that cap would lift off in January 1st of this coming new biennium. I actually developed an alternative cap, if you will, based upon the statewide average of general education funding, so to keep it somewhat comparable with per student funding in the K-12 system. But as you know, some families choose an all-day program, some choose a half-day program, and so the scholarships are kind of awarded also depending on you know, how, what type of program you choose to place your child in.
Okay. If I could,
Representative Wagenius.
Thank you. So I tried to do some math myself, so I'll give it to you and see if I'm even close. So there are, according to Governor Dayton, there are 59,800 kids that would be eligible for four-year-old program. So I use that as a base number. And then I looked at how many kids are in kindergarten right now who are on free and reduced lunch. And that's 42% of the kids who are now in kindergarten. Now, we don't have that for four-year-olds, but I think that's probably a decent marker. And so that would be 25,100 kids who are at risk, in poverty, and my math says that you cover 7,369 of them, so that leaves almost 18,000 that aren't covered. So I think it would be, let's check the math and see if I am right or wrong about that, because that number's really troubling to me that it's so low. So the other thing, Mr. Chair, I just bring up is that we have the assumption that these are kids in my district. I do represent Minneapolis, and I have three elementary schools in my district. But I look at some of the outstate elementary schools, and the free and reduced lunch is higher than in my urban district. And I'll just give you some examples. I looked at Sumner Elementary in Austin, 281 kids, 76% free and reduced lunch. And then in the Worthington Public Schools in Prairie Elementary, it's over 1,000 kids, 72% free and reduced lunch. Albert Lee, Halverson Elementary, 336 kids, 71% free and reduced lunch.
Eagle Valley Public in Eagle Valley, 148 kids, 68% free and reduced lunch. Long Prairie Elementary, 67%. Austin Nevlin Elementary, 400 kids, 65%. I could keep on going, and I have not still gotten down to the number of free and reduced lunches in my urban district. So I think we have to rethink how we are talking about who we're serving here, and does this work for outstate Minnesota as well as the metro? Because I think people have the assumption that it is urban kids that are the ones in trouble, and that's just not true. So I bring this up now because if my math is wrong, I want to know it. But I think I'm kind of got it.
Chair Loon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Wagenius. And I appreciate your comments, and this is something that we've done a lot of discussion on in committee and a lot of thinking and putting together this proposal. And, again, we're continuing to look at those scholarships because, I mean, the discussion we were just having really keys on the scholarships. But what I want to do so members have a fuller dialogue on the whole early childhood discussion is to call your attention, if you look at the spreadsheet, lines 170 through, 176. We have a number of programs targeted at early childhood learning, both from, the very earliest learning, which is with the parents through the ECFE or Early Childhood and Family Education Program, which again is funded at the forecast amount base of $57,517,000 for the biennium. School readiness, and this again is money that goes to all school districts to run a pre-K program. We bumped that up by about $10 million, so we're investing in that. And again, that gets to, in some rural areas, maybe your school is, the preschool program that exists, and maybe not as many private providers yet in the scholarship network. That is continuing to grow as that parent aware rating system is just now rolling out to the rest of the state. It's been done in phases. The early learning scholarships, as I mentioned, a $30 million increase in our investment in that program. The parent child home program, another bump. Head Start, which we haven't talked about, that is a federal and state funded program. We invest $40 million in Head Start. So when we're talking about early childhood, I just hope members bear in mind that we're talking about all of those programs together, which provide a pretty significant investment in our commitment to early childhood and trying to help close that achievement gap really at its earliest stages and get all of our kids ready for kindergarten.
Representative Guineas.
Thank you. If I could follow up on that. I hear the inputs. What I think we have to do is figure out actually how many children are covered, and specifically how many of the children who are in that 42% of free and reduced lunch are covered. So we really do need to do the math. This is the math, and this is pretty simple math. So I think I know staff, and I know Mr. Strom is got a better math head than I will ever have. But these are the numbers we have to know what we're really doing. And so hopefully before we get to the floor, we will know actually how many of the 25,100 children who are four-year-olds, who are free and reduced lunch kids, will actually be ready for kindergarten.
Geraldine.
Representative Wagenius, we will put our best pencils on it and try to come up with those numbers for you before we get to the floor.
Representative Detmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I contacted my school districts, and they're really excited about the scholarships program. Right now, my school districts already have the early learning programs, and they have a sliding scale where some parents can pay more and some parents don't, and so forth. And it's been working out very well for our school districts. I think it might maybe be good for us to contact our school district, see what they're already doing. I think putting the money where it's really needed is the important thing, and I think the scholarship programs would be able to do that. And so I've got a lot of support from my school districts for this program. I just wanted to make that comment.
Thank you. Chair Loon. Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Chair Loon, I just heard you say that you're putting $40 million toward Head Start, and I was looking for that in the difference column on the spreadsheet, and I didn't find it there. I found a zero, but I think the $40 million that you were referring to is probably the base funding.
That's correct.
Right. But so there's no new money in your budget for Head Start at all, and I assume that means there's no inflationary amount for Head Start or enrollment growth amount for Head Start. Am I correct in that?
Chair Loon.
Mr. Chair, Representative Liebling, no, there is no increase off the base for Head Start, although those programs are also eligible for scholarship money. And the way the program currently works, we have two avenues. We have money that flows directly to the parents in scholarship, and also a portion of the scholarship money was set aside for what is referred to as Pathway 2. So money that goes directly to a provider that has a waiting list for children on it that is quality rated, and so Head Start facilities are all eligible for that money as well.
Representative Liebling.
Thank you for that. And Mr. Chair, I also wanted to just return briefly to this issue about the parent-child home program, and I was very interested to hear about that. I mean, as you know, I'm not as familiar with the education budget at all, and it's a complicated budget, but so you said that this is for children from about 2 to 2.5 years old, and I'm a strong believer in home visiting programs. I think you said, Representative Loon, that this is it's part of dealing with the achievement gap and trying to target high-risk families to provide assistance. And I'm particularly interested in this because in the HHS budget, I believe that money is being zeroed out that goes for home visiting. But I think that money is for younger, even prenatal and new mothers and these kids who are up to age 2 or so. I'm not really sure. I wonder if you know, if you know how those things fit together. And if I'm correct that that's being zeroed out in the HHS budget, and I think I am, I'll have to recheck that, but how this works, that you're putting in the money here, a little bit of extra money. Of course, it's $200,000 for a statewide program. We know that's not a whole lot of extra money, but, aren't we then focusing on the kids? You know, we know that brain growth is happening in those very early years. So aren't we just waiting here until the kid is 2, 2.5 then, and then going to help that family?
Chair Loon.
Mr. Chair and Representative Liebling, well, I mean, I think there's different types of home visiting programs, and I'm not as familiar with all of the ones operated through the Department of Human Service, but I think it's like visiting nurse, and some of them start maybe even prenatally going up through early childhood. This program specifically is more on helping to help parents become sort of their child's first educator. And so, again, the program starts when a child is about 2, somewhere between 2 and 2.5, and goes on for almost 2 years. And a trained home visitor goes in twice a week to visit with that family. They bring a book or a toy when they come, and they basically introduce it to the parents and the child. A lot of these parents, English may not be their first language, so they'll bring the book in either in English or, if the parents prefer it, in their native language. And then they go through different activities that the parents can do with the child to reinforce literacy and vocabulary development, those kind of things. So it's really more of a, I'd say, almost an early literacy type program. So it's probably a little bit different than some of the programs that DHS operates in that. But again, it was started and taken on by Jewish Family and Children's Services many years ago, just as one of the philanthropic things they've done. And we've just given them a little money so they can reach more children. But most of their funding does come from donations and foundation support.
Thank you. Representative Hornstein, questions on the bill?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. In Article 2, I just wanted to get some clarity from you. One of the issues that we're very concerned about in Minneapolis is, of course, our integration aid. And I wanted to know really how you're treating that, because on one hand you're talking about targeting and closing the achievement gap, but then on the other hand you have a $350 per pupil cap that just is affecting Minneapolis and St. Paul, as I understand it. So, you know, again, this is very, very concerning to us, simply because you know, we rely on this integration aid, and then to cap it seems to go in the opposite direction. So just if you could clarify that, that would be helpful.
Chair Loon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Hornstein. Yes, well, you know, we had to make some difficult decisions to try to do as much as we could with the money. And you know, the integration program did go through a major reform. 4 years ago it was slated for sunset, and a working group composed and sort of retooled the program, and it's now AIM, or Achievement Integration for Minnesota, is how the program is referred to now. And there were some changes made to the funding for Minneapolis and St. Paul at that point, but, you know, as it stands now, there's a number of districts that qualify for this aid and levy program, but Minneapolis currently is eligible for $415 a pupil per pupil under this program, and St. Paul $403. And I think the next school that would come close to getting anywhere near that is Brooklyn Center at $279. So both Minneapolis and St. Paul sort of stand out as getting a lot more aid than other districts that actually have higher percentages of students of color within their populations. So what we did is sort of developed a formula where St. Paul and Minneapolis would get $350 per pupil. It's still significantly more than, I said, the next highest number per student would be Brooklyn Center at $279, but would allow both of those school districts to, through the levy portion of the program, recapture any of those funds you weren't getting in aid, so to make your districts whole, if you would, on the overall amount.
Representative Hornstein, another question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a very quick follow-up. I'm going to think through what you said, but now I don't want us to get into a situation where we're picking winners and losers and pitting needy districts against each other. You know, with this new criteria formula that you had described. You know, the issue with Minneapolis and St. Paul is, you know, goes beyond simply the you know, percentages of students in poverty, et cetera. I mean, we have very significant challenges, English as a second language students. I don't want to go through the whole litany of challenges that we face that are very, very unique in the state. And so to, this is what I understand you to be saying, and I think what the bill is clearly indicating is that there is a reduction. There is a reduction in integration aid to Minneapolis and St. Paul. And I that's problematic given the challenges that we have. So just wanted to express those concerns, Mr. Chair.
Representative Carlson.
Mr. Chair, just as a follow-up to that, Representative Hornstein was talking, I got out the education finance levy sheet that was handed out, is that calculated in then, being that we just heard that you were within your levy target? Are those numbers then for Minneapolis and St. Paul calculated in, being that they're above the 350 on the levy sheet?
Chair Loon?
Yes, they are, Mr. Chair, and if you want further details, I'll defer to Ms. Johnson.
They are calculated in.
Ms. Johnson.
Mr. Chair and Representative Carlson, yes. There's a wrinkle in the integration program in that the levies are forward shifted, and I'd have to defer to that my resident expert here on to explain that, but it doesn't come online as an impact until pay 17. But the revenue is new. The revenue impact is neutral. There's no loss of aid or levy authority, so they'd get the same amount in FY 16 that they are. Or pay 17 as they normally would.
Representative Carlson?
The same amount of state aid then? Is that what?
So but it's, no.
Ms. Johnson?
I'm just trying to, you know, we watch very carefully when the K-12 finance bill goes through. And I don't represent either city, but I do always perk up when we start talking about the levies because we watch very closely the impact on property taxes, wherever those may occur, because there's a lot of special levies on the list that impact differently on school districts around the state, whatever their individual needs are. And that's why I was asking the question then whether a particular section that he was referencing to for his city was calculated in the levy target. By the way, we don't formally set the levy target, Mr. Chairman. So what was the levy target?
Chair Loon.
Well, Mr. Chair, and you're right, Representative Carlson, we don't officially set one. I basically was aiming for a zero levy target, so no impact on the levy. I think we're about there, but it shows up that we're at $5 million under levy from the previous year, but a lot of that's due to the forward shifting. There's something a little, it's confusing on the integration levy that usually the when you pay your property taxes May and October, usually the October money goes to the next fiscal year or school year. For some reason in the integration program, the October payment goes to the school year that was completed. So they do that differently. So they call that forward shifting. And so it kind of throws off the numbers a little bit. But once you account for that in the tails, it's just under a zero.
Mr. Chairman, this is
Representative Carlson.
As you know, you and I are both on taxes as well, and the chair of the tax committee is here. This particular question, when we dealt with the levies and taxes, never really came up, but you're within the target that your caucus and staff hold. Thank you.
All right, members, I think at this time, let me go to the one amendment that I'm aware of, the A26-1 amendment. Representative Erdahl moves the A26-1 amendment. Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And, I do, I'm very appreciative of Representative Loon for including a section on mentorship in her bill. It's, I think, a very important component in training and retaining teachers, and that's why I introduced this. Later on, discovered that there were some items needed to make this bill better, and this amendment addresses the need to train the mentors so that they can better train those that they are mentoring. So that's the purpose of this amendment, to put those qualifications in there. It actually does not assign costs to the Board of Teaching, and in fact encourages the Board of Teaching to contribute to this effort to the extent that their resources would allow. This being said, I would withdraw this amendment and ask that it be given serious consideration when the conference committee meets.
Representative Erdahl withdraws the A26-1 amendment. Members, I have one person who would ask to testify, Peter Eckhoff. If he's available, if he could come forward.
All right. You've got to be forward up or
Mr. Eckhoff, welcome to the Committee on Ways and Means. Can you just state your name for the record and give us your testimony?
Certainly. My name is Peter Eckhoff, Mr. Chair, and I am a 20-year veteran teacher in the Robbinsdale area school system. I'm also the president of the Robbinsdale Federation of Teachers. We're not the largest school district in the state, but we do serve approximately 12,000 students out in our school district area. We believe budgets are all about values and choices. And with a nearly $1.9 billion surplus, you could have made vastly different choices. You could have decided to put more money on the formula, and instead you've chosen to add just over 0.5% to the formula. And that will result in cuts in my district. It will result in larger class sizes for our students. It will result in fewer choices in the educational options that they have available to them. Your proposed formula increase is, I believe, $34 per pupil. That's less than when our state was struggling to fill a multi-billion-dollar deficit. In a time of surplus, it certainly begs the question, why would we choose to underfund schools? We've heard from you over and over again that we want the best teachers in our classrooms, but you won't fund the teacher development and evaluation law that gives teachers the tools that they need to improve their profession. We in Robbinsdale are one of the fortunate districts that participate in QCOMP, though we worry for the other districts that do not have those resources to tap. There are no funds from the states to cover those costs, so the money must come from somewhere else in the general fund. Any changes to the general fund budget impacts the education opportunities for our students. We say we want to close the achievement gap, but your budget will ultimately increase class sizes, raise caseloads in our English language learners and our special education programs, and it will limit the electives that are available to our students. You also don't invest in significantly expanding preschool, which we all know is a proven way to reduce the gap. We believe the time is right to make those key investments in our future and our children, and I urge you to do better. I thank you for your time today. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Mr. Eckhoff. Just a question. You, I think, legitimately make comments about the need to adequately fund the formula. But then you also talk about more money in preschool. And that, frankly, takes money from the formula. So how do you balance that? Because that's the situation that we are facing. The governor's program also is, I think, low on the formula.
I would agree. He's at a 1%.
1% and 1%. But he is putting a lot of money into the four-year-olds and into other areas that, again, I think are taking from the formula. So how do you balance that with limited funding that we have?
Mr. Eckhoff.
I don't know that I got all the answers. What I do know is that even the governor's budget concerns both my local leaders, my school board members, my administrators, because of the fact that a 1% increase in the general formula will impact our programs as well. I, too, struggle with the belief that the place we're going to have the greatest impact on the future of the achievement gap is with our birth to five students. So I do believe that the governor is pointing in the right direction for a place to have deep impact on some of those pieces. But if we're going to take steps in the direction of needing to make certain that we're meeting our current needs, along with expanding what opportunities we have, I believe that the formula does need to have a greater amount of money invested.
Representative Erdahl.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair and Mr. Eckhoff. And, you know, I agree with you on that, but again, emphasizing that education, you know, schools maybe aren't going to be able to have it both ways. If you want more money on the formula, there's not going to be very much left over for anything else.
Mr. Eckhoff, sorry, did someone else have a question? Otherwise, Mr. Eckhoff, thank you for your testimony.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair.
Okay. All right, members, I have no further amendments or testifiers, so discussion to the bill, Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Representative Lund, Madam Chair. You gave us an exciting journey from the beginning to today. You planned well. You used the full amount of time that we had in every single committee meeting, plus
and then some.
Representative Norness's time from time to time. But he was very forgiving. The testimony that was, or the planning of the meetings and the testimony that was brought in was statewide, diverse, brought out the needs and the accomplishments of many of the people that came before us. The kids that came before us and testified for programs that they were hoping to have more money and experiences with were magnificent. The parents, the teachers, the superintendents, and the school business agents all pointed out over the months of what they needed, what they had, what had come before, and where they hoped we would go. Our committee meetings offered hope and promise. During the time that we were listening in testimony to all the groups and the many concerned citizens and parents and children, our caucus met and developed goals with 6 goals and 18 sub-goals. We developed 5 outcomes that we hoped we would be able to occur. And then we got to April, and the budget targets came out. Or maybe it was at the end of March, and the budget targets came out. And our hope and our expectation that we would be able to continue to what had been laid, what had come before, when the previous administration and legislature were able to overcome a deficit and still increase education across the state, public education, private education, early childhood, lifelong learning, and some steps into higher ed. At our last meeting on April 15th, people still came before us. It was a long meeting in the afternoon where the testifiers were sincere, but they didn't give us anything to work with. And in the evening, the testifiers that came before us, parents and spokespersons for the groups, gave us facts of what they needed, what we would have to work on. And we had continued ideas to go forth and work. But we didn't have any more money. And as has been said here, this bill did the best possible with the amount of money. But it didn't meet the goals that our caucus had developed. And the primary one being all of our promises over the years. I mean, I've always had the promise and the conversations with the people in my district, whatever district it was, over the years. We always said education is our number one priority at the Minnesota Legislature. But we didn't feel that the education was the number one priority of those that set the targets. The The bill does not provide for greater opportunities. The Commissioner of Education has said the bill disproportionately denies opportunity to minority and poor kids. Many people thought that by testifying on what their needs were, that we might meet their needs, at least to a point where they wouldn't have larger classrooms, larger class sizes in their same standard classrooms. Expanded school days, different kinds of opportunities of cooperativeness and working together. We hoped that the targets would allow for us, for the S and the school districts, to move on rather than to continue to play catch up. We hope that the final budget does not divide the state, pitting students of one school district against another. We hoped that we would be backing off of political devices, policies like those that are contained in House File 2. We hope that we would be able to continue to build off the foundation of last session's work. And we hoped we would be able to pass elements of the bill that would increase esteem for the teaching profession and recruit new teachers into the workforce and provide effective professional development. We go a little ways on some of those, but not far enough. And for those reasons that I've suggested, we will not encourage people to vote yes.
Further discussion, Representative Carlson.
Yeah. Chairman, I assume you're going toward a potential vote pretty soon, so I'd like to make a few comments before that.
Sure. Well, and Representative Carlson, I think we're going back into session at 3 o'clock, so we have some time.
I just wanted to make a few comments,
sure.
Mr. Chairman, and if others do, that's fine. But, you know, we heard here this afternoon with the testimony, we have been talking about the concerns about a number of bills from our side of the aisle in terms of the funding level in light of the $2 billion surplus that we have. And as everyone on the committee knows, that our caucus proposed higher levels of funding in several of these areas, and the night that the budget resolution was adopted, we had an amendment, I think it was offered by Representative Murphy, that would have provided just shy of $700 million increase for K-12, $694,610,000, which would have been an overall 4.2% increase. And as you know, the budget resolution doesn't target where that money would go. It would have been the resources made available to the K-12 Finance Committee. They would have determined how that would have been spent. In the end, the budget resolution that was passed by the majority party was way below that. What's before us right now is $156,767,000, or just a 0.9% increase, 0.9% increase. way below, by the way, when you look at it on a percentage basis, several of the other committees. And, Mr. Chairman, I do have a question of you or staff before I continue on, and that's, Mr. Chairman, we have adjusted in recent days the targets for some other committees, a modest adjustment upward for higher education targeted at the U of M and two campuses within the U of M. We did increase the target for health and human services. We did increase the target for the environmental committee a few days ago. Just to mention a few, I think there may have been at least one other, but those were all increases in the target. So my question initially is, what is left on the bottom line? And there's really two numbers that I'm interested in. As we get close to the end of the session, you did set aside about $20 million for so-called other bills. And I know we've had a few, but not many, and I don't know what may be in the pipeline, but there is money there. But then there is the money that was left on the bottom line. Initially, we started out at $301 million under the original budget resolution. And I guess my question, and I see Mr. Marks is sending it over to you, is what's left on the bottom line, and then what's left in the other bills category at this point?
Representative Carlson, the number that is left on the bottom line at this point, as you call it, is about $148 million. The other, about $148 million. And the other bills category, well, we had passed the deficiency bill, you know, prior to setting the budget resolution. And then we had left $5 million beyond that in the other bills category. And I don't know exactly what we've spent on that. I don't think it's a great deal, maybe $1 million. Mr. Marks?
Mr. Chair, there would be the, depending on how that lottery, electronic lottery bill gets counted, that was $800,000, I believe. The avian flu bill, whether that's within the agriculture target or separate yet, that would be another $800,000+. We're aware of a claims bill of about $17,000 that the Subcommittee on Claims approved. That hasn't been considered here in Ways and Means Committee yet. So.
And Representative Carlson, I guess I would say that, you know, the agriculture bill hasn't come here yet. And, you know, I think I had talked to you earlier that we'd be likely putting some additional money towards the agriculture bill because of the avian flu outbreak and some other issues. The Health and Human Services bill hasn't come here yet. And while we did adjust that target, you know, it's certainly possible that we could adjust it again. You know, the tax bill isn't here yet at this point. And, you know, another possibility, of course, would be that there's some additional money that's put into the budget reserve over and beyond the $100 million that has been put into it. But that is where we are in terms of the money that's available at this point, Representative Carlson.
Well, my whole point is that there is money on the bottom line, and there's really the two categories. Here we have a bill that's before us that many feel, at least on our side of the aisle, it's grossly underfunded. Even if we were able to get the whole $148 million, that for this bill, that's far below what our original amendment on the table would have provided for. But quite disappointed have been all along with this number in particular, because when we're talking about education, we're talking about the future of the state of Minnesota, in my view, and I talk about all of education when I'm referring to that, as well as higher education. One point that I would like to make, because I have heard in other settings, other committees, that while education is going up with the basic about $1 billion plus what you're putting in, and so I did have some conversations, and I do think we need to set that record straight, because that's kind of out there among some in terms of what happens, because I'm talking now about where we were under current law as a result of the February forecast. And some of you may be interested, because that number is kicked around. I'm sure that Representative Moon is aware of it, but that surfaced when we were talking about Health and Human Services as well. And my comment in that setting in a different meeting, because it hasn't been here yet, was, well, demographics had changed. And that was what was driving some of the Health and Human Services costs. When we talk about K-12, I've been informed then when I was looking into and having conversations on that question, pupil growth was 16,607, and that cost $222 million. The increase in the number of students in poverty increased costs $39 million. This one is perhaps easily forgotten, because we always talk about all-day kindergarten, but it wasn't started until the second year of the biennium. And so when we talk about current law, we really have to talk about 2 years and not one. And when you talk about the full 2 years then of providing universal all-day K, that's $464 million. And then the special ed increases, adult basic education, and then property tax relief that was contained, that all totals $176 million. So that billion is really gone under current law with what happened with enrollment increases across the state of Minnesota, all-day kindergarten coming online both years, and so on. So I just wanted to point that out so that it's understood what really is happening with K-12 finance. So truly, the only new dollars that are going in then is what was contained in the budget resolution at just shy of $157 million. And quite frankly, Mr. Chairman, I was hoping that your caucus, when I saw the in recent days the amendments to the House budget resolution coming before us, I thought with the priority, as Representative Murphy put out, that the state puts on education, by golly, there would be another amendment to the budget resolution with their new rule of the two-hour notice. I was literally checking up on that right up until 2 hours before the meeting was convened, because I truly believed that there would be something within that bottom line that would be put into K-12, and it just wasn't there. So along with Representative Murphy, she is our lead on education, encouraged a no vote. And Mr. Chairman, I have to concur that they would encourage a no vote. And if we were successful in a no vote, but I do know the plans are to have this bill up, I guess, on Saturday. So the likelihood of the bill being held in committee for future adjustments and budget targets is pretty slim. But I would hope that some of the folks on the other side of the aisle would give some thought to what we're really doing here with what should be our number one priority in the state of Minnesota, in my view, and that's education. And I gave the same arguments when the higher ed bill was before us as well. So I'll stop there, Mr. Chairman, and if there's others that have questions or comments, that's fine.
And Representative Cornish.
Now, the conservative side of the viewpoint, in every finance committee we've had this year, you folks have said $2 billion surplus, let's spend it. $2 billion surplus, let's spend it everywhere. And pretty soon the surplus is gone, and we've built up the base so much that the next biennium we have a deficit, and then we're really backing up, and it's another crisis. Spent some money this year in my budget, but I'm going to have to answer for that. We've got a lot of people back home that don't think we should be spending this much. They think we're overspending right now, and that we should be giving a lot back in reserve. So I have no problem voting for this bill. I think it's a good bill. I'm going to vote yes.
And Representative Carlson, I guess let me just say a couple things. And to Representative Murphy, of course, as you know, we do spend and are proposing to spend more money on this budget than any other committee and any other budget of the state. So from that standpoint, I think it's fair to say that it is our top priority. When you look at the 0.9% increase that you identified, again, you know, I think we get into talking about whether we're looking at the forecasted base or whether we are, like I think most families in Minnesota do, looking at what we spent last year or the last 2 years versus what we're proposing to spend next year, the next 2 years. And there is a $1,060,000,000 increase proposed from 2014-15 to 16-17. And you are correct, Representative Carlson, that some of those items don't go to the, probably the average classroom because of some of the things that have been done recently. The all-day K, for example, enrollment growth, in some cases, the money that goes to enrollment growth is additional money, in a sense, to a classroom, because if a classroom can accommodate one or two more students without any new teaching staff, so to speak, you know, there is some additional money for books or supplies, but it's, you know, it is by and large new money. In some cases where you need to hire a new staff member, it's not. There are there's significant additional special education money in here, something like $155 million because of the inflator that we have in statute. We're not proposing to change that. And so, you know, overall, if you look at just where we were the last 2 years compared to the next 2 years, there's something like about a 6.7% increase in funding. But Representative Carlson and others, I certainly know that we have needs out there, and I'm confident that when this bill comes back from conference committee that there will be more money in it than it is now. And I guess I just wanted to address those issues about it not being the number one priority, because again, we are spending more money in this committee than any other, and I think appropriately, and we are giving a significant increase in 16-17 as opposed to 14-15. Representative Carlson.
Mr. Chairman, when you talked about education being the priority, the numbers, the percentages provided by our nonpartisan staff in terms of percentage increases, there's, you know, if you can look at the dollar amount and relative to some of the smaller accounts, the dollar amount may be higher, but if you look at the percentage, that tells you a very different story. But when we talk about priorities, you know, there's you're looking at the tax target, $2,297,000,000, and a 68.2% increase on that side in terms of the budget resolution. So truly the priority, and you and I are both on taxes, and we know what's happening in that bill of your caucus was the tax bill. And I think the ratio that some of our people were looking at is something like 15 to 1 for every dollar we put into education. We put $15 into the tax bill for various tax issues that were put before that committee, and it's going to be before us. We can look more at the various items that are in it, but the point being that that truly overwhelmingly was the majority party's number one priority, and it is costing the appropriation side nearly in education here today, is my point. I think it's costing far too much when we look to the future in terms of what our priority was as reflected in the budget resolution. But I guess this is the second time I said I was done, but I didn't feel I needed to respond when you engaged in priorities.
Oh, and that's perfectly fair, Representative Carlson. And I guess I would just say that you're right, certainly from the standpoint of looking at new money, there is more new money in that sense allocated to the tax committee. I guess if you look at the overall spending, I guess there is obviously a lot more spending in the education area. But Representative Lincheski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Chair Loon, you know, on the education bill, I think others have already expressed some disappointment, and I think Chair Loon is an excellent legislator and did a great job with her target. But I think the fundamental issue is the targeting, and you were just talking about that with Representative Carlson. And I, you know, I did noted you said that you expected when this went to the Senate, the tax or the education bill would get bigger. Can you give me more information about that?
Well, Representative Chesky, I guess it's just an observation that the Senate is proposing to spend more money than the House, and that normally when you go to conference, there's some compromise, and that I would thus expect that there would be compromise here. Representative Lencheski.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for saying that, and I'm glad to hear with, you know, 3.5 weeks to go that people are understanding that there's going to have to be a lot of compromise. And, you know, I hope you will also compromise with the governor's number on education, not just with the Senate's. And I think many of us in the House minority think the governor's got the best number on education. And so I hope you'll, you know that the governor won't sign a bill if he's not been involved in the process. So I hope it's not just the House and the Senate. But I do think that, you know, because Mr. Chair, you know, I've passed some bills with the Senate, and of course Governor Plenty dispatched with those immediately. So you're going to need to have the governor involved in these. And I know that Chair Lou knows that the governor will be a critical part of her omnibus education bill. But, you know, I'm interested in, you know, when you talk about, well, when the compromise begins and working with the Senate, you know, that you think the number will get bigger. Do you anticipate that the majority, which part of your budget will you give up on then to do that?
Representative Lencheski, I guess I don't know that I have all the negotiations figured out yet and that I'll have, I don't know how much influence I'll have if I think I do have them figured out. So we'll have to see where we go on that. I guess it's just an observation that that since we are lower than the Senate and the governor, that there will be some compromise there. Representative Chesky.
Okay, well, and thank you, Mr. Chair. And, you know, I know you want to get to the floor, I'm sure. And, again, this really I'm kind of off target of Chair Loon's bill, so I understand that. But this is the Ways and Means Committee, which does, along with the Tax Committee, kind of divvy up everything. And so, you know, I will say that the minority, I think, hopes that when you compromise to the governor and the Senate, that you're not going to ask Representative Dean to cut even more people off of health care. And you're not going to ask, or Chair Dean, and you're not going to ask Chair McNamara to get a bigger cut, and you're not going to, I hope you're going to consider taking some of that money out of your tax target, and you all in the majority will decide that, but, you know, I just think it just should be highlighted. It's getting difficult to imagine that the $2 billion tax cut is very serious, honestly. Because, and not from Chair Davids, he's done a great job, but you know, most I have heard throughout the halls and both sides of the aisle that many people are just sort of counting on that all the divisions are going to get more money because the tax bill isn't, you know, those cuts aren't going to happen. And so it feels like before we've even voted on the House floor that the majority really is kind of backing away from their tax proposal. So it seems to me if you're going to, if Representative Loon's target is going to go, Chair Loon's target's going to go up, unless it's coming from Chair Dean or the other finance chairs, then it is that the tax bill really isn't a genuine proposal in that sense, and not the work of the tax committee, I mean in the targeting process. So I know you can't give me the insight as to where your majority might to take that money out of, but, you know, I just interested that it wouldn't be further cuts to more people.
Well, Representative Chesky, you weren't here for this discussion earlier, but Representative Carlson had asked me how much of the unallocated money was available, and there is about $148 million of unallocated money available at this time, and so that's certainly a significant amount of money that if it were to, for example, all go to the Education Committee would put us actually quite close to the Senate target. So there are other alternatives, but Chair Davids.
Well, thank you, Chair Knobloch. The remarks that Chair Lencheski just made about the $2 billion not being serious, and there's talk in the hallways that that's not a serious number. I haven't heard any of those conversations, nor will I participate in any. That being said, you know, the situation's fluid here, and we will go forward. You know, the governor and I are only $2 billion apart. That's, we're within reach here. And so all I can say is, members, don't stop believing.
Well, with that, Chair Loon, any final closing statements?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate the question, the discussion of the committee. And I just have to say a special thank you to Representative Murphy. She's, I feel so very fortunate. She's been a terrific minority lead. I think we've worked really well together. We've had some great discussions, and I appreciate her comments, and I understand her disappointment over the target. But I think there are also some things in here I hope that that she and others will find to be worthy investments of the taxpayer money, and will go to a good purpose for educating our children. So with that, I just appreciate the committee's time, and I would ask for your support.
All right. Chair Loon renews her motion that House File 844 be referred to the General Register. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
No. Motion prevails. House File 844 is referred to the General Register. Members, tomorrow we will be taking up the Health and Human Services bill. I think the time we've got is noon, but please watch for the posting on that, as well as any other possible bills that we might have coming up as well. With that, we are adjourned.